This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
My name is Nick Helm, and this is
Nathaniel Metcalf,
and this is Nick and
Nat's Fan Club.
Don't tell your friends. Second rule of Fan Club is don't tell your friend. Do tell your friends.
What I like about that this morning is 10 seconds before we went on air, Nick said to me, "Are you ready?" And I said, "Yeah." And actually,
You said, yeah.
I said, "Yeah, I was born ready."
You did your David Essex. Yeah. I think I've been slimed.
Yep. I don't know if that's a reference to anyone else but us. Yet. We should play it again.
We should definitely play it again. I've been slimed. Yep. Good, David Essex.
That's David Essex's cover of Ghostbusters. Check that out.
Let me tell you something. Boston makes me feel good. Even better than the original, some might say. It's not. But they'd be wrong. But yeah, some might say that. So just before it started, I said, "Yeah, you ready now?" I was born ready. And so this is a typical clusterfuck, as per usual. Minute and 40 in, yet to do one bit of broadcastable content. Yeah. But here we are. I'm just going to apologise to everyone in advance. I'm actually in a surprisingly good mood right now, but I had one of the worst night's sleep in recorded history last night. It's very hot, isn't it? I don't want to be the first person.
Is this what you wrote down?
I'm not a big fan of heat. Well, I've just been away and I've just got back. This is what you do, isn't it? You go away and come back. And sometimes, you know, witness protection.
You never come back.
Yeah, whether it's being part of a witness protection program, or maybe you've displeased a mob boss and your body is now swimming in the Arizona mudflats. But in this case, it was just a five-day holiday.
The people that went to Vietnam, they say some of them never came back.
Although they came back. They're very distant. It's nice to have them back, but maybe not invite them to too many dinner parties.
Keep it light.
So I've been in Spain, and Spain was hot but dry. This place is wet. Hot and wet, just as I like it. It's so disgusting. Nat's face is just like, oh no, Nick. There was that. And then, so it took me ages to get sleep. And then I had, I would say, two of the top 10 worst, most horrific anxiety nightmares.
Absolutely brilliant. I love these.
Of all time. I love these. I was cooking Christmas dinner on an industrial scale for two people, right? And lots of people that couldn't cook through incompetence kept sort of like getting in my way, and it got worse and worse and worse. I kept waking up. Well, my bed squeaks as well. I've got a really shit bed, and it squeaks, and it squeaks all the time. It'll squeak if I'm breathing too heavy. You know?
Are you sure that's not a wheeze?
That's my excuse. It's funny, though. Breathing too heavy. No, I'm not. I was going to. And I'm also knackered because I've been up all night fucking. No, I haven't really. I've just come off a course of antidepressants and there's no sex. Keep it light! I tell you what, I have been a fan of this week, Nat.
Alcohol.
I haven't drank in ages. I haven't been drinking for quite a long time because I was on antidepressants, and they weren't very good. This is a little shout out to anyone that's on antidepressants, because they give them away quite freely in the doctors. I was feeling pretty depressed before I went to the doctor. I had a pretty bad week, and then I went to the doctors and I said, can you just sort of like, I don't want to feel like this anymore. I've had depression for maybe like 30, and I never talk about it, except for, you know, when I'm on the radio and on stage. But I went to the doctors and I'd been... I've had depression 36 years. I always say that my favourite Care Bear was the one with the thundercloud on his stomach. You know, that's not a fucking happy kid. But went to the doctors. They gave me these antidepressants. And it's a bit shit. I'll retweet it. But the ones I were on didn't really fit with me, and they made me feel really, really depressed. With none of the top side of it, so I wasn't getting the high.
That's the opposite of antidepressants.
They were awful, and I was a zombie. I think if you listen back to the fan club things, you can hear sort of like a distinct change on episode 4 when I started taking them. I was on them for like a month, so they didn't really sit right with me, and I felt really weird, and I've just come off them, and it's taken me like about a week and a half to sort of like start feeling like myself again, and I feel amazing. I feel absolutely amazing. I'm really, I'm right happy for the first time in a very long time. I'm worried about my act. I feel happy for the first time in a long time. And anyone that was with me through my Twitter storm on Wednesday night will know that I was in a pretty good mood, recommending shows left, right, and centre, being nice to people uncharacteristically. Yeah, I had a really... So I'm feeling pretty good at the moment. I've started drinking again, not like heavily, but heavily. And I'm just really happy at the moment. So that's what I've been a fan of. How about you, Nat?
So what you'd say is, come off your antidepressants and just drink heavily.
No, but there are other antidepressants out there, is what I mean to say.
Yes, and, so you're saying if you're on some that aren't doing the job.
I think you can probably shop around. And also, if you are on them and you're feeling worse than you were before, it is also...
And when Nick says shop around, he doesn't mean on the dark web.
Not on the dark web. No. But I went into... I went into the doctor. My doctor, she gave me some... I'm not going to talk about this much longer. But if you... I'm not... Also, I'm not a professional psychotherapist or psychologist or anything like that. Right. But she gave me some pills, and I was meant to go on for 4 weeks, and I went in after 4 weeks and I said, these aren't really working. And then another doctor said, oh, well, just sometimes it takes 6. And I was doing them again, and I was in such a dark place. I was just like, actually, and I was not myself either, and I couldn't ejaculate. And so it was just like, well, what's this? Hang on a minute. Not only am I more depressed than ever, but I can't do my favourite thing. So it was like, so that was sort of depressing. That was depressing, you know? It was the opposite of what it was meant to be. But but I just think I've come off them, and that's the thing. But that's not like saying that antidepressants don't work or they do work. I'm just like saying that if it's not the right thing for you and you're feeling even worse, then it's all right to come off them and kind of like touch base with yourself again. And literally, I mean, I didn't leave the house on Wednesday.
tweeting with one hand,
touching base like a motherfucker. I've been very happy in general this week. But you're about to go to Edinburgh, aren't you, Nat?
Sure.
So we're having to scrabble around to find gaps in the train timetables to make sure that you can get down here every week for a month and then get back up to do your show.
So I've got to get like a train about 5:45 in the morning from Edinburgh. Come down here, do the show.
Come down here, do the show live.
And do the show as live. And then
pop on the train on the way back. It takes like 6 hours to get down here, right? But it only takes an hour, 10 minutes to get back. And then your show is
straight
on
stage.
1:10 every day in Edinburgh. Yeah. And you did your last preview last night, didn't you?
I did.
And how did it go?
It went pretty good. I'm quite, I feel calmer about it. I've given in to the idea of going to Edinburgh. Quite zen about it right now.
Yeah.
I might not be in an hour.
Well, do you know what we'll do? Week on week, we'll just ask you how it's going.
How it's going.
Yeah, and we'll just see.
I like this. This is like Memento.
Yeah. I think that's really good. I mean, you got your last preview out of the way, you're doing it. But we're a little bit, I'm talking about antidepressants. Do you know what I mean? We've seen nothing this week. you've been busy getting your show finished, and
yeah. Well, you live just around the corner, don't you?
I live just around the corner, so this is absolutely no skin off my nose. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time I go to the local post office, pick up a parcel that I've missed, because let's face it, I've been naked in my flat, and I'm not going to get dressed just to answer the door.
And, it's on the way to the post office as well.
So this place is just on the way to the post office. So it's absolutely great for me. Very practical. What I'm saying is that I never go out of my way to do this show. I'll literally, you know, I've normally got an errand nearby to do, and this is just, you know, a stop off.
There's a shop across the road where you buy your Pepsis.
I buy my Pepsis, but they're out of, well, this is the third
there's
shop
a shortage.
We've been
there's
into.
A shortage.
There's a corner shop over the road that does Pepsi, that does Pepsi Max Cherry. That's my drink of choice. And for the first 2 weeks, I was drinking there. Mm-hmm. And then they stopped doing Pepsi Max Cherry, and I was having to go down to Coke Zero, which I'm not a fan of. Mm. And then they stopped having Coke Zero, and then it was Diet Coke. And I was just saying, do you know what? F this shop. I'm not going to go there anymore. And so I went to Nisa last week.
Or Nisa.
Let's call that
the whole thing
off. And I went to Nisa last week, and I got myself a bottle of Pepsi Max Cherry. Not a fan of the bottles, I'd rather have a can. Easily, more easily.
I like a glass bottle.
They're more easy to recycle than plastic, is a can. And big fan of recycling. And, just that's fan club.
Great guy.
And so we were in Nisa last week, and then that was fine. And then, bloody hell, this week we've gone. Nisa. They didn't have any Pepsi, which is like, it's almost like I made up that.
Do you call this
Pepsi.
Nisa?
I think this
not
is
for
worser.
Me, it isn't. Worser, exactly.
And so we ended up having to go to bloody Tesco's. Which, if you ask my mother, is the devil's business. But, you know, and the thing about going into Tesco's was they did have Pepsi Max Cherry, but they only had one bottle. And I like to get two bottles so that I've got something to keep going for the rest of the day.
Now, fan club.
That's fan club. Yeah, well, I'm really excited about your show. I'm really excited to find out about it. I sent you what I did send you was I sent you one of my favourite website series.
No,
I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube,
this is what we should have talked about.
Remember back in the day when the internet first started, and people said, "Well, of course, the internet's going to replace television," and it was just like bullshit. Is the internet going to replace television as a source of? I don't even watch stuff on YouTube. I like Twitter is just like if I am watching something at home, which is why I like going to the cinema, because it's just like you have to focus on the screen. Yeah. But if I am watching something at home, then I will just have my phone, I'll be tweeting all the way through it, and I won't be, you know, I have to, what I've started doing is rewinding stuff a lot because I keep missing it. But anyway, so I watched this, I've got, there's two.
Double screening.
There's two websites, there's two web series that I like. There's one called Defunctland. And one called Abandoned. Abandoned is generally about like places of interest that have now been abandoned. So you'll get like a stadium, like a old kind of sports arena / music stadium that has now been abandoned. And they sort of like show footage of going around. It's like haunted, and they talk about what it used to be like in its heyday and what it's like now. And then Defunctland is a web series that's. About failed and disastrous or no longer running theme park attractions. So I'm a big fan of roller coasters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sent you one this week for the
Disney's. Oh, what was it called?
Superstar Limo.
Superstar Limo. That's right.
Superstar Limo, which was basically
it was in a Disneyland, California. They were trying to add on to the existing Disneyland in California, and they thought if people go to California, they're going to go to all these other places in California. They're going to go to Monument Valley. They're going to visit all these other attractions. But they thought if they could bring all of the rest of California to a park in California, that everyone would just stay in Disneyland and say they visited everywhere in California.
So they had a recreation of the Golden Gate Bridge and the Redwood Forest and all of that stuff. So it's just kind of like, oh, right, that's kind of absolutely missing the point of the fact that Disney was just like, not only do we want to be a destination in our own right, but we want to be all the destinations.
All the destinations.
And then it was Michael Eisner that wanted to do it, who's the head of Disney at the time, and then he realised that that was just an absolutely crazy, stupid idea. And so they were like, right, we need to replace it last minute. And so they said, okay, we've got this idea for a dark ride. A dark ride is a ride that is, you have a roller coaster that's outside, mm-hmm. and that is not a dark ride. And then the ones that are contained inside a building are the dark ride. So something like Space Mountain would be a dark ride. The Aerosmith ride is a dark ride, where it's like it's a roller coaster, but it's within a contained mm-hmm. building. So they had an idea for a dark ride, which is called Superstar Limo, which is the concept of it would be that you get to be a Hollywood celebrity. You're in California. Why not have the Hollywood treatment? And you get in a limousine, and it's on a roll. It's a roller coaster, and you go at high speed around, and you meet loads of celebrities. And at the end of it, you become a superstar yourself. And
the paparazzi.
All the way through it, you're being chased by the paparazzi from one end of town to the other. The problem with that was they were just about to get ready to launch it, and Princess Diana died. And they were just like, right, well, we're Disney. We can't be associated with anything like that. So they scrapped that. They scrapped the paparazzi element, and then they also scrapped the high-speed pursuit element. Yeah. And they made it like a slow ride, like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, where you're basically, or it's a small world, but without not on water. Or if you're a Chessington kind of guy, a Professor Burp's Bubble Works from the 90s, which isn't there anymore.
It's not there anymore. I went to the went and read it on the last weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I really liked Professor Birch's Bubble Works.
Me too.
I'm a massive
very
fan.
Very fond of it.
And the Fifth Dimension, did you ever go on that?
Well, I don't remember that one.
That was at Chessington as well. And it was just when the Vampire Ride opened, and then there was, like, there was a few things to do. Road Dragon River.
Oh, yeah.
That was,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
was,
yeah,
good. I love theme parks. Anyway, so they were kind of like, right, okay, so this is going to be a slow ride. So basically, what happens is, so Michael Eisner was just like, right, okay, I'm the head of Disney, I'm going to make a big speech. He loved the idea of the ride. They pitched this idea and he said, I love it, I love it, because they basically had the space and they were just like, we've got to fill it. And he goes, I love this idea of this slow pursuit Hollywood journey through, yeah. There was loads of sort of like in jokes. They were like, there was a DreamWorks joke where instead of DreamWorks, they called it Dream Jerks.
Yeah.
And there was sort of like, Michael Eisner really loved how sort of like in jokey it was. Michael Eisner was going to do like a presentation at the beginning of the show saying, hey guys, welcome to Disneyland's Superstar Limo. And it was all kind of like, you know, he was really proud of this thing. and then you'd go around this really slow moving ride, and at the end of it you'd be a celebrity. And then what happened was they didn't have the rights to any likenesses from any celebrities. So what they ended up doing was it was like they did 3D kind of models, the equivalent of the street artist at Leicester Square.
And I think weren't they all people who were contracted to Disney at the time?
Yeah, but they were sort of like mid-level. So Drew Carey is one of the real Drew Carey.
It's like an animatronic Drew Carey.
They've spent a lot of money doing an animatronic Drew Carey. There was an animatronic Cindy Crawford. Yeah. This was like late 90s as well. So this wasn't the peak of Cindy Crawford's career.
I think you could have got the real ones to stand there for as much money as it would have
the
cost.
The video is amazing because basically, you got the real Drew Carey with all of the cast of the Drew Carey show and Rosie O'Donnell. There's Ryan Stiles is there, and Drew Carey is sort of like jumping up and down with excitement, just going, I can't wait! I'm in a ride at Disneyland!" And you're there going, "Like, yeah, but you're even you've got to know that if in a ride that promises meeting the biggest stars in Hollywood, even you've got to admit that that's going to be pretty shit when you come face to face with yourself, right?" And so Drew Carey's so excited, and then there's footage of Drew Carey and the cast of the Drew Carey show going around this really slow pink limousine meeting Drew Carey, and they all look sort of horrified by it. Oh, the other thing that happened was before they opened it, Michael Eisner said, "Oh well, this is awful. I'm not going to be in it."
Yeah.
So they refilmed the intro of, like, they put like this Harvey Weinstein-esque sleazy Hollywood producer in it, and then they took all of like the Dreams Jerks jokes out, because they said, "I mean, this show is awful. This ride is awful. So we don't have the chutzpah to kind of like start slagging off other people." And so they go all the way around this thing, and Drew Carey looks horrified. And then the person that they meet at the end, the biggest star in Hollywood, bearing in mind that, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger
could have had anyone.
It could have had anyone, you know,
maybe someone from the past, golden age of Hollywood.
Burt Reynolds, Humphrey Bogart, the biggest star of anyone it could be when you get all the way around to the end, and you come face to face with the big biggest star on the planet, there by the exit, waving you off, is Whoopi Goldberg. Oh man, the look on their faces when they go, and there's this really amazing moment where at the end of Drew Carey's first sort of like experience with the ride, they all get out, and this isn't even for cameras because they're being paid by Disney to endorse the product, and everyone really awkwardly just sort of like looks at their watches and goes, let's go to another ride. Let's go somewhere else. Let's go anywhere other than here.
I like that they closed the ride down, but for no reason. They just were like, we had nothing to replace it. Let's just close it.
Well, the reason why we created it was so that we wouldn't have an empty space. But this ride is so bad.
We think that
we'll just have an empty space. And they reskinned all of like the animatronics. And now when you go to
Monsters Inc.,
there's a guy in kind of like a yellow Back to the Future kind of nuclear fallout outfit who's sort of like acting all wacky. That's Drew Carey. And there's another one that's sort of like standing around this is what they did with the Cindy Crawford one. She was sort of like a streetwalker, sort of leaning against the side, wearing kind of provocative clothing. And Cindy Crawford's still there as well. They repackaged all of them. Anyway, that's what. I really enjoyed that video.
Me too.
I've been trying to tell everyone to watch it. It's just so funny. Good. How disappointed they are at the end is amazing. Going to play a song and then we're going to get a guest on. I get these kind of headaches. I get one every day. I wake up with a migraine since you ran away. I got a load of tension burning up my neck. Something's wrong with my suspension, so pass those tablets to this wreck. Aspirin damage. Aspirin damage kills the pain and destroys the brain. No one told. Your suit, your tie, and all.
Presents. Film This with Sean Walsh and Mark Simmons.
Bond producers Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli said in a statement, "We are
Barbara Broccoli.
Why is that? Yeah,
Broccoli."
That really annoys me because Mark Simmons there is pretending that he's never heard of Barbara Broccoli and Cubby Broccoli, and you go, who's never fucking heard of Cubby Broccoli, the producer of the James Bond film? I mean, that's all he's done. This is Broccoli at the beginning of every. It just so infuriates me, that bit from Filmish, the other, our rival.
The
other flagship FUBAR show, two like cool
we're,
dudes
we're,
talking
we're
about.
One of the flagship shows.
We are the flagship FUBAR show. I mean, we have upwards and including 10 listeners a week.
10 listeners a week.
yeah.
Tell and it's friends, a growing audience.
Tell your friends. It's a growing audience, yeah. It's round the corner, mate. It's fine. We're joined in the studio now by comedian.
Comedian.
Sorry.
It's like a 70s man.
By woman comedian, Suze Kempner.
Hello.
How
comedian.
Are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you.
You were just about to say about Action Park, weren't you?
Yeah, I heard you talking about defunct rides in theme parks, and I'm really obsessed with this old theme park that used to be in New York in the 70s and 80s called Action Park. And it was like an outdoor water park, and with like a concrete alpine slide. And they shut it down because loads of people died.
Yeah, it was really dangerous. It was like your mate had cobbled together a water flume out of crates, wooden crates, and then they did the thing. Johnny Knoxville has just made a film about it.
Has he?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's like a Jack. I think it's probably a bit like. Not Dirty Grandpa. What's the Bad Grandpa?
Oh, yeah.
Bad Grandpa.
Which one's...
Because Dirty Grandpa's the De Niro, Robert De Niro film. Yeah. Where
that's
he really
right.
commits.
Yeah.
De Niro really commits.
He went method on it. It was really good. I think that, it's Taxi Driver, Dirty Grandpa, Goodfellas. For me, those are the big three. Bad Grandpa, where it's kind of like, it's got fictional... It's got a narrative, but they do loads of stunts.
Yeah, it's
stuff.
All improvised.
So I think
really
Action
commits.
Park is like that.
Yeah,
isn't every water ride you've ever been on, was there always like a rumour, wasn't there, that someone got their head cut open someone put some bubble gum and a razor blade halfway down a water slide?
Oh, well, we had that one in St Albans growing up at the what were they called?
Definitely never happened, though.
They were flumes, aquazooms they were called.
Yeah.
Verulamium swimming pool.
We had Palace. Near us, that shut down because people died in it.
Did people die in your actual water palace?
They might have done. Maybe they ran out of money and died.
That's always the rumour. It's like, people died. And it's like, did it? Or did no
maybe.
One go?
Well, if you look at this thing that I was just telling you about, what was it called? Abandoned. There's an actual Disney park. There was a Disney park that was sort of like a water thing where they basically used lake water.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't sort of like clean, and well, they cleaned it, went through a cleaning process, but there were sort of antibacterial things that got into the guests, and there was a school party of kids in the late 90s. I can't remember the name of the park though, but it's closed down. Basically, one of the kids got infected with an antibacterial thing and died. Because they were using lake water and there was sort of like something wrong with the cleaning. But this is a Disney park.
That's
and they were just
bizarre.
Like, we're closing this. It was one of their sort of... It was very much the Nick and Nat's fan club of the Disney water park thing. But no one's died on this yet, though.
Not yet.
Well,
God willing.
Stay tuned.
If it keeps going, one of us will definitely die.
Yeah,
it keeps going
true.
For long and long. But as we were reminded very clearly before the show started, we're still on a probation period. not yet been given the mugs.
No.
But you were given your tea today in a
Sean Walsh
a FUBAR
mug.
Oh, mug that says Sean with two N's, and that can only be one.
There's only one.
There's only one Sean with.
Is that really how his name's spelt?
With two N's.
Do you think he did that when he went into comedy?
Yeah. I think it means that people talk about him even when he's not in the room, just like this situation now. So in many ways, we're doing a lot to promote Sean Walsh.
I'm Nathaniel, but I've got three N's at the beginning.
And I'm Nick, and I've just got the one N.
So you were all right in those gift shops where they had all the...
I was absolutely
names
fine. Except for they never really ever spelt Nicholas right. I've got Nicholas
really?
With an H, and there was always Nicholas with an O. And no H. Obviously, Nicholas with an H also has an O.
Yeah.
We're getting bogged down in this. How's your show coming along? Your show's about Sonic the Hedgehog, right?
Yeah, it's about how I grew up playing Sonic. and whether I wasted my 90s. Spoiler alert, I didn't.
Are you still a Sonic fan?
Yeah, love it. I really love it, like, too much. I played it again when I started writing the show, which was all finished in January, by the way. Yep. I started playing it again. I went, I'm going to play it again.
As research.
Yeah, I went. I bet I get bored of this in 10 minutes. No,
really.
Still great.
Really? And has that ruined actually writing the show now?
I think that ship had already sailed when I came up with the idea, but we'll see.
Were you a Sonic 2 fan?
Yeah.
Did you go
8-bit and 16-bit?
I am 37.
Okay.
So I remember I can't remember which Christmas it was, but I had a Mega Drive. Mm. I used to have a Master System.
Yeah.
Upgraded to a Mega Drive. Mm-hmm. I still miss the old 8-bits.
Should have kept hold of it.
I got a Master System converter, which basically you slotted on top of a Mega Drive and made your Mega Drive shitter. I got Sonic 2 for Christmas.
Mega Drive Sonic 2.
Master System Sonic 2. And when I opened it, inside the box was Sonic 1.
Oh.
And it ruined Christmas that
year. Oh, no.
That sounds like a really terrible Christmas.
It made it worse. I was an absolute dick about it. And I was just sort of like, as I was going to bed, I sort of like looked very sort of like disappointed at my parents. And I knew what I was doing.
Did they do it for a prank?
No,
Imagine how awful they would feel as well.
They would have felt terrible about it. And I literally just went out of my way to make them feel worse. And I was just like, on my way to bed on Christmas Day, I was just, I'm a little bit disappointed with how things have turned out. But you did your best. And then I went to bed.
I think I've got the upper hand there. I'm a bigger man.
I absolutely nailed the spirit of Christmas.
They learned a valuable lesson this Christmas.
So Sonic, I was always a Sega Alex Kidd over Mario. And I loved Sonic the Hedgehog so much. Yeah.
I remember Sonic the Hedgehog 2 came out on a Tuesday and they called it Sonic Tuesday.
Yeah. Tuesday. And it came out in Japan, America, and Europe at the same time, which was unheard of back then.
Is this all material from your show?
No, I knew that anyway.
Oh, really? That's so exciting.
What's the nature of the show? Is it talking about that, or is it playing along, or
it's I go, look at all the Sonic I played, but when I was a kid, I was never able to complete Sonic with all the Chaos Emeralds because I had a very selfish dad and brother who wanted to play it too, so I didn't get first dibs on the Master System or the Mega Drive.
I've got an amazing memory about Sonic on the Mega Drive, which was my sister was playing it on the Mega Drive, and I wanted to get on the Mega Drive, and this is the furthest she'd ever gotten Sonic. And she'd done it all by like hard work and perseverance, mm-hmm. and she'd got really far. She's 3 years older than me. And she got, she was really sort of like, done really hard. I was watching, and I said, if you press that button, it's Infinity Lives. Oh. And she had a glint in her eye, like the woman at the end of Last Crusade when she's reaching for the Holy Grail, and she just went out and she pressed the reset button straight away, and it's put her right back to the beginning of the game. And
you sound like a brilliant kid now.
Absolutely
lovely kid.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think she learned a valuable lesson about hard work and greed. Yeah.
I've got to be honest though. Like, what did you think the reset button did?
Yeah, it says reset on it.
I think it doesn't say
Infinity Lives. No. So she got really far based on her own
merit,
hoist of her own petard.
Yeah.
And
your sister comes after this really badly.
An absolute Billy Bellon. I can't believe that she did that. Anyway, I was a cool dude, and I managed to just say, seeing as she'd gone all the way back to the beginning, I guess it's my turn. Once again, I won.
Sega taught your family a lot of lessons.
Yeah, I'm a fucking monster. And what a place to find that out on live international radio.
With a growing audience. Every week on week.
What do you reckon the audience is? Millions?
Oh, yeah.
I would say that we've probably got between 3 and 2,000 listeners.
3 and 2,000.
Somewhere between that.
We're on iTunes. Have you heard of iTunes?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And that is a potential audience of unlimited, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
In theory.
Billions of people, whoever's got the internet.
And FUBAR is on the internet, so
yes.
that's worldwide, isn't it, the internet?
Yeah.
WWW, World Wide Web.
Worldwide, that is.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be crazy, because the year is 2018, wouldn't it be crazy if we looked up one day and it turned out that we had exactly 2018 listeners?
Oh.
Like the year. Wouldn't that be weird?
Is there a way of looking?
There's a thing that I had to do in shops where people, you know, they'll say, oh, that'd be 1685. And I'll say, oh, like yeah. the year.
Yeah.
And they'll look at me like...
I do that all the time. I always say, what a year that was. And they never go... Oh, yeah.
That's it.
I just want a little bit of acknowledgement.
No, that'd be 1984, please. Oh, same year as Terminator.
I'd better buy something else, or these purchases are tainted. Yeah.
I love it. Once somebody said, it's like £3.86. And I put my hand in my pocket, got it out, and I had £3.86 in my hand. And I went, oh! £3.86. And the guy looked at me like, who gives a shit, mate? It's a fucking queue. Get the fuck out of my face, you fucking pathetic, useless piece of shit of a human. And I was just like, fair enough. We've all got our issues.
That's fine, Clem.
So how many Edinburghs have you done, Suze?
This is my fifth Edinburgh in a row.
That's a solo artist.
My sixth show, yeah. My fifth solo year, but my sixth show. Because one year I did two.
Oh, have you done one every year?
Yeah, since 2014.
Have you never missed a year?
Not since 2014. In 2013 I went up and I did a shit play.
Which year?
2014. 2013. Yeah, so technically six in a row.
You did two solo shows one year?
Yeah, in 2016. Yeah,
whoa.
They were both very successful and I didn't lose loads of weight and cry a lot.
This is standard stuff now.
It was awful.
This is standard stuff. One year I did four shows.
Really?
Oh, yeah, but they're
not. You wrote four shows?
But not solo shows.
Well, one of them was a musical that I wrote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One of them was a double act, to be fair.
Okay. Yeah.
But come on, Paul. Pull your weight.
Paul
and,
who?
Paul F. Taylor. We were in a double act called...
Yeah.
I was going to say we were in a double act called Short and Curly, but that's his double act now. We were in a double act
you
called
wish
Calvin
you were
Taylor.
In Short.
I do wish I was in Short and Curly. I can't believe he left me for his wife. I did that, and then I did... I didn't write four solo shows, but in 1 year.
Did you write two, though?
Did I write two? Yeah, I've done all sorts of crazy shit in my life.
I think that's impressive. I would find that incredibly stressful doing
it. Yeah, it is. It was a terrible mistake.
I've probably not written two solo shows in 1 year.
No, if you wrote a musical and a solo show in the same year...
No, I didn't write a solo show that year. That was the year I did my double act. Okay. You're better than me, Suze. What can I say?
Just in quantity.
Although, I haven't had a year off. This is my first year off since 2006.
Really?
2005 was my last year off.
Oh.
And then before that, so I did 97, 98.
Oh, bloody
not
hell.
99.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. 97, 98, 99, not 2000, 2001, 2002, not 2003,
right.
2004, not 2005, 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17,
not 2018.
Feel absolutely fucking chronic about it, but it's fine. I've got an idea for a show next year, so it's fine.
Ooh.
Don't worry, guys. Don't worry, Suze. I've got an idea for a show
Thank
next
goodness.
Year, so it's not going to be...
Edinburgh's not dead.
Oh, well, I'm awful, aren't I? I've literally just told two anecdotes about what a cunt I am. I've hijacked...
Three?
I've hijacked...
There were two Sega ones.
There were two Sega ones. What's the third one there, I'm a cunt?
Just now.
I didn't think that was me
thing.
Being a cunt. To be honest, Suze, I wasn't including that one just then.
All art is subjective.
Goodness me. You've done two fuckfests, haven't you? Was it two fuckfests?
I did one and I got drunk and sang backing vocals too loudly. And
you've not been back since?
Yeah, definitely wasn't us.
Was that the first one?
What's his name? Lloyd Griffith looked at me like I was scum.
Oh, but you did my Christmas spectacular though, didn't you, on
yeah.
Radio 1?
No.
Yes, you did.
I didn't. I was asked and I was busy.
Oh.
And I was busy doing something not as good, but I stick to my plans.
Are you on my album?
No.
How many times?
Why am I even here?
How many times have we worked together then?
We did the 2014 show at the Grand.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really good. And then we did the Christmas show and I got drunk and sang BVs too loudly.
Yeah, but no one cares about that.
Lloyd Griffith did.
But Lloyd hasn't been back since either.
But then I saw him in Edinburgh last year and he was quite friendly. I thought, oh, it's all right, we're past that now.
Lloyd is lovely.
Yeah, I like him.
Yes. I like the term.
I like
BVs
his yellow
as well.
BVs.
BVs.
Sorry, that stands for Big Value for the people who are not in the music industry.
Big Value is too loud.
Yeah, it's Big Value.
I always think that about Big Value Comedy.
Big Value Comedy, a real thing.
I just think
thing.
It's wrong, isn't it? It should be Good Value Comedy.
Good Value.
Should be Good Value and just generally good quality.
Yeah, which, not the year I did it, but there you go. But I was doing my solo show that year.
Okay, so, which year was that?
2010, that's my big year.
Big year.
2010.
I went to Edinburgh 2010 as well. I did... It was my 8th gig.
Did you see Keep Hold of the Gold when you were there?
No, I was only there for 2 days.
When
sorry.
Was the? Please tell me. When was the first time you saw?
I did see you in 2010 because I was doing stand up. No, 2009.
Pretty impressive.
I saw you at the Lion's Den.
Was it good? Lion's Den.
Yeah.
Lion's Den comedy.
I was
of
like,
course.
But I'm afraid Lucy Porter was also on, and I went, oh, I feel like and I saw you in News Review. You were in the cast after me.
Fucking hell! You did the cast before me on News Review. Fucking hell,
you
news
did a Jonathan
review.
Ross impression that I really enjoyed. You kept shouting finger on the pulse.
Go on, do your Jonathan Ross impression. I want to hear this.
My Jonathan
it was
Ross
just
impression,
his actual voice.
My Jonathan Ross impression was, hello, I'm Jonathan Ross. And I basically just did that because the thing about News Review is they got genuinely good impressionists and they got people from a theatre background. The year we did it, Sarah Pascoe directed it.
Yeah.
Or the one that we did, Sarah Pascoe directed it. And there was me and Caroline Maybe that were doing it, and then two actors.
Oh my god, was Caroline Maybe in
that? Yeah. And basically, me and Caroline, the writers for News Review, I mean, I'm never going to do News Review again. The writers for News Review would send us these sketches, which would make me feel physically sick about the thought that I would have to perform them. So, me and Caroline would just rewrite everything because we were comedians. Yeah. And then the actors would sort of like do their bit. Kyron McConville was a really great actor. He did really good Richard Madeley.
Yeah. I remember, he was good.
And they asked me to do Jonathan Ross, and I was just like, I can't do impressions, I'm not going to do it. So I would do like the worst Jonathan Ross impression ever. And I remember the writers used to come in on the first night of the week. So was it Wednesdays to Saturdays, was it?
Is it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Rehearsed Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
You rehearsed and wrote Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You had Mondays off, and then you'd do your performances
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, it was quite an intense... And you got paid, like, £27 a week.
Yeah, it was rubbish. It's rubbish.
You got absolutely... And you'd have to give them 100% of your time, except for Mondays, that you get. It was really stressful. And then what would happen is, you'd try and make the shows as good as possible in the week you had. I imagine it's the equivalent of doing, like... It's the closest I'll get to doing something like Saturday Night Live, where you're writing all week and then you're performing in the evening, like new topical sketches. And the writers would come on the first night to see which of their sketches would get through. And sometimes their sketches would, they'd say, oh, you've done a Jonathan Ross sketch and that's being used. And so they'd come excited to see their stuff being used. And we'd have rewritten it entirely because...
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And there were some good sketches, but there were a lot of sketches where you go, I can see some potential in that. But at the end of the day, we have to perform this week.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard.
Yeah, they had a message board. Did you know that?
The writer's message board.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hated us. They absolutely hated us.
They kept slagging me off on it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, well, that's okay. They did it with you as well.
Yeah.
But they absolutely hated, because Sarah Pascoe was at the time a stand-up comedian as well. So they hated the fact that there were people that were there with their own opinions and their own kind of style of comedy.
Yeah.
And they weren't just sort of like, and I am a fan of some actors, but they weren't just, mindless drones.
Yeah.
And so they would, it was really difficult, News Review was.
Yeah.
But there'd always be the thing, which was Rory Bremner started off on News Review.
Yes,
and you'd go,
Bill Bailey directed a News Review. And then, wasn't like Ben Elton not allowed in it? When he wasn't famous, he auditioned for it and they were like, no, you can't be in it. And they went, Ben Elton got turned down. I'm like, well, your loss. Because he wrote We Will Rock You, and that's really good.
I've not seen it.
It's rubbish.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
That's why I haven't seen it because I did hear it wasn't.
Yeah, it's garbage.
But I love the word garbage. I like the way I love the way it's coming back and being anglicised.
Stinking garbage.
But the thing about Neutraview is the person that directed the production after us was Gemma Whelan.
Oh, was it?
And so you go, well, Sarah Pascoe directs Neutraview, and she's obviously Sarah Pascoe now. Yeah. And Gemma Whelan's obviously. So I do think there is something in the fact that Neutraview, but I don't think it's Neutraview's thing. I used to put out chairs for Amuse Moose. And Hills Jago, that's how I started out in comedy. I used to put out chairs. And Hills Jago, that runs Amuse Moose, used to say, well, Jimmy Carr started out putting out chairs. And you go, yeah. But his career really changed when he started telling jokes, though, didn't it? That was the big step. So there's one of those things. But I tell you, yeah, I'm not sure if News Review is responsible for Gemma Whelan
being
in Game of Thrones.
Imagine if it
was. The Gemma Whelan. I saw you do a really good Judy Finnegan, and we'd love you to be in Game of Thrones.
I think you've got what it takes.
Can you get the girl that did Claudia Winkleman? We would love her to be in Game of Thrones. So I don't know.
I did a Hillary Clinton impression. From a looking back, a very, very sexist sketch about Hillary Clinton, and it was horrible, and I just went, I better do it because otherwise that's very disrespectful to the writers. And then on the night that we were going to do that sketch, like on that Thursday when that sketch was going to debut, our director just went, no, I'm pulling it, it's awful. She just pulled it out of the show.
You've got to be the one that does it though.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You've got to be the one who's like pleased with it or trying to make it better, because you're the one who's doing it. A writer gets to do it from behind like a typewriter and doesn't have any idea. The jokes I wrote for my shows were terrible until I got them, until I do in front of an audience, and then you go, okay, I've got to make this better.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're
that's
not
why
got
we
that,
believe you.
I'm not 100% sure, but I've got a feeling that Josh Widdicombe and Henry Widdicombe started out for fuck's sake, Natalie. Sean added an extra N because of Sean William Scott.
Did he? So he wasn't born with that extra N.
What was I saying?
The Widdicombes.
The Widdicombes. I think they started off submitting sketches for News Review.
I might be wrong.
That it may have been a news thing on the radio.
Okay. But, News Jack or something.
No, it would have been earlier than that.
Okay.
We should talk about your cat, Suze. It says here that your cat has appeared in a movie.
Yes. My cat, when I was growing up, it was called Boris, and he played Jones in Aliens.
No!
Fuck off!
Yeah!
I did know this sort of vaguely.
Yeah, I do work into conversations quite early.
That is, you know, Aliens or Alien?
Aliens.
Okay, cool.
Second one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Cat is Jones.
Well, yeah.
All right.
It's Boris.
That's a bit of a shame to, you know, because Aliens is not my favourite of the franchise. But also, it's a bit of a sad thing to find out that the cat obviously died in between.
He might not
had to
have
be
done.
Replaced.
Might not have done.
Well, if it's not the same one from the first one, then it's.
No, they needed a cat that could hiss really easily.
And your one can do that.
Yeah, he was horrible.
How did they find him?
He's my mum's friend found animals for film and TV.
Oh, wow.
Simple as that. My dog was in Snatch as well.
I rewatched Aliens recently, and that cat is fucking amazing.
Yeah, he's. Like, you know when he's hissing?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hissing at a cat that's just off camera.
Oh, really?
But what did you think he was hissing at?
The prospect of an alien.
Yeah, exactly. So
good acting.
It's really good. For me, in that film, it's Weaver, Henriksen, the cat.
Yeah.
Paxton.
In that order. No, I'll take that.
And Bean. Is it Bean or Bien?
I'd say Bean.
Mr. Bean. Star of Terminator, Aliens, and The Rock. Mr. Bean. I really love that.
We should play your song.
Yeah, but okay.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We're running out of time.
Like I chose a nice short one.
To rattle things. Oh, thank you for that.
But,
don't worry. The show works at its best when everyone picks a 5.5 minute song.
That was my first choice. And I went, don't do that.
What is the song? It is
Stone Cold Crazy by Queen.
Is that in We Will Rock You?
No, it's not. It's a good song. We'll be right back.
We were talking about who we did and didn't like within the world of spoken word performances.
With a mic,
Nick and Nat's fan club.
we're back. So, what time is your show, Sue?
My show is at 1 p.m.
Oh fucking no. Hell! There's a clash!
Everybody, clash! We're going to have a Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome battle now to see who gets to.
Speaking of We Will Rock You, I was talking to a friend about the Tina musical at the moment, Tina Turner musical at the moment, and they were like saying, oh, it's like a jukebox musical thing, taking you through her life. I love Tina Turner so much, I can't. And I think we mentioned it in a future episode that we played during Edinburgh. But what's really funny about Mad Max, the Mad Max thing, is that there's a part in the musical where.
No.
It's really great. There's a part in the musical, though, where they go. One of the greatest lines that you can use for this moment, we've got it right here, it's a Tina Turner song, and she's going to turn around and she's going to start singing We Don't Need Another Hero. And in the life story of Tina Turner, and so she's something happens and I haven't seen it, I'm going to take my mum for
my friend's in it. I reckon it's good.
I think it's meant to be amazing. It's meant to be everything that The Bodyguard was only with a good decent story. Like The Bodyguard was simultaneously the shittest thing you've ever seen. And then Beverly Knight is the best thing you've ever seen. I'm so in love with Beverly Knight. I think she's the best thing since sliced bread. But anyway, so the Tina thing, and they go, there's a bit when Tina Turner goes, we don't need another hero. Yeah? And then it's like, great. And then she starts singing, we don't need another hero. And this is the life story of Tina Turner. And then she starts singing about Thunderdome. And it's just like, oh, actually, it's one of those songs where it's got a really iconic chorus. And then the fucking the actual body of the song is the plot of Mad Max 3. It's like, Who Wants to Live Forever? And it's a kind of magic from Highlander. Yeah. And you go like, oh, it's a kind of magic. And then he's singing about this race that lives. A thousand years. And you go, it's not really applicable to just any old song. You've written a very specific song about Highlander.
And that's an Elmo's Fire song. Elmo's Fire. But that's not about the film. That's about a man in a wheelchair who rolled across America.
So why did they call the film St. Elmo's Fire after the song?
No, I don't think so. I think they named it after the phenomenon that is St. Elmo's Fire, which they named the cafe after.
No, is St. Elmo's Fire a good film?
No.
It's not?
No, it doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold
that
up.
That and Reality Bites, I put them together as films from that era that do not hold up.
Reality Bites was 10 years after.
To be fair.
St. Elmo's Fire
not
was
10
what,
years.
87?
Late 80s,
and Reality
I think.
Bites was mid-90s. Ben Stiller's directorial debut.
94, I want to say, Reality Bites. Maybe 93, 93.
Look at us desperately trying to get our Reality Bites info out. Can you look up what year St. Elmo's Fire was? I think it's 87. What do you think it was?
I think 88.
I think St. Elmo's Fire, a noun, is a phenomenon in which a luminous electrical discharge appears on a ship or aircraft during a storm.
I mean, you're nodding very smugly there, Natalie, but 1985!
1985,
really?
St. Elmo's Fire. Reality Bites, Reality Bites.
That was the one that was...
93 Reality Bites.
93.
I reckon 93 Reality Bites, 95 I'd say Reality
93.
Bites. Well, maybe I'm... 94!
Well, lead in the
95,
middle.
I'm probably thinking of Flirting with Disaster. I think if they tried to make St. Elmo's Fire in 1987, they wouldn't have been able to get them all together in one room. It would have been like Herding Cats.
That's true.
the cat pack.
You've got him here, Estevez, running off down there.
Oh, I was talking to someone about Mannequin yesterday.
Oh, that's a very good film. Oh, I'm glad you were talking about that.
Mama put the coins on my ass because I sure don't believe what I'm saying. I love that genre, not that film specifically, actually.
What genre would you put it in?
Comedy.
I love comedy.
Andrew McCarthy movies. I like the genre of movie that is Andrew McCarthy movie. St. Elmo's Fire, Mannequin,
I like
Weekend at Bernie's. One. and two.
And two.
Did he make both of them?
Weekend at Bernie's two is absolutely, I mean...
It's the same.
It's not.
It's Weekend not. At two. Weekend at Bernie's is, Weekend at Bernie's is brilliant, though. Any, he gets reanimated, doesn't he? Any in film, voodoo.
Barry Bostwick is the bad guy following him around, putting on voodoo curses on...
Really? So it's that different?
Weekend at Bernie's 2 is very much the mannequin on the move of Andrew McCarthy's
sequel. Oh, I think it's Book of Shadows.
It would have been better if, in actual fact, much like Mannequin on the Move, they'd have put William Ragsdale as the Andrew McCarthy replacement. William Ragsdale, obviously famous for being Andrew McCarthy's replacement in Mannequin on the Move.
That's Fan Club. Where else does this guy get?
Also, I think we mentioned Mannequin on the Move in a future episode, but fucking hell, love Mannequin on the Move.
Oh, we are very much on probation. Very much on probation.
Lila Vandenberg like to point out on the set of Uncle, Lila used to say, it's actually Mannequin 2 on the Move. Well, Lila, I looked it up on IMDb, and it was Mannequin on the Move in England, and it was Mannequin 2 on the Move in the US. So forgive me for not having international knowledge of that movie. So we've got to play the game soon, as we're being reminded by Natalie. Let's stop having so much fun.
And this game shows.
Got a place that.
Okay, this is a game where I have to. I give you a list of celebrities, and you have to say whether the following celebrity is better or worse than the preceding ones.
The game is called Better or Worse.
It's called Better or Worse, and it's entirely based on my own opinions.
Okay, well, I'll have a think.
Okay, so Jack Nicholson, that's your first card.
Yep.
Is Jack Nicholson better or worse than Heath Ledger?
Better.
Better. He is better.
He's better.
Better.
Is Heath Ledger better or worse than Cesar Romero?
Better.
Worse.
Really?
Oh, sorry. Cesar Romero is better. Yeah, Cesar Romero is better.
Than Heath Ledger?
Yes. Yeah.
But had Heath Ledger been around long enough, he may have surpassed all
he
of them.
He painted over his moustache.
Not the point.
It's the joke.
That's the point.
No, I know it's not the point, but I'm just like, it's being on Heath Ledger's side here.
It's from Jared Leto.
I see what you're doing here now as well, Nat. This has got very lazy. You haven't even bothered bringing in the fucking photos
it's very
anymore.
Very busy. Jared Leto.
You've just done a list of people that played the joke. This is, who's the best Joker?
Yeah.
Just Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero is better. Is Jamie Lee Curtis
What?
Better or worse than Jared Leto?
When was she the Joker?
Oh,
she
wasn't. Better.
I ran out. She's better. She's better.
She's good and he isn't.
You haven't even said Mark Hamill.
No,
better
I haven't.
Better than who?
This is shit this week, mate. How are we meant to judge Suze
Mark Hamill,
based on
better.
All of our other guests? Absolutely fucking furious. You've really dropped the ball of late because of this Edinburgh worry. I'm just fucking furious having to do all this fucking heavy lifting. Yeah, I'm the one that's going to get it in the neck. He talked for 15 minutes about anti-depression pills. All that Mannequin on the Move stuff. Yeah, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's filler. Nat's done nothing. Come on, keep going.
Is Bruce Willis better or worse than Jamie Lee Curtis?
Bruce Willis.
Jamie Lee Curtis better. Bruce Willis worse. He was a dick to Kevin Smith.
Yeah,
on Cop Out, so it's okay, but still, don't be professional.
Jamie Lee Curtis, who's in Christmas with the Cranks.
I think it's a tough one, actually.
She was still a professional.
She's Halloween, she's Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
I think Jamie Lee Curtis might have it over
Bruce
Willis.
Yeah.
Steve McQueen better or worse than Bruce Willis?
Steve McQueen, which one? The director of
Good point, though.
Is that the end of the game?
No. Keep going. Rattle through it.
Who's Steve McQueen? Old one. Better than...
Old Steve McQueen.
Bruce Willis is better than Steve McQueen.
No, Steve McQueen better.
No.
Bruce Willis' last four films
was
straight to video.
Steve McQueen was an absolute knobhead.
But I would.
I'm going to say McQueen... better than Bruce Willis.
Yeah, so yes.
I mean, Kevin Costner. Opinion, but your opinion is so fucked up at the moment.
Is Kevin Costner better or worse than Steve McQueen?
Kevin
Costner better.
Better.
Yes.
Is Diane Keaton better or worse than
Diane Keaton better.
She is better. Is Meryl Streep better or worse than Diane
Street,
Keaton?
Meryl Streep.
Diane Keaton.
Meryl
Streep, very
tough.
I love
it. They're both high cards.
They're high cards.
Yeah, this isn't like comparing Jared Leto to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Not one of them shit.
I might go Streep.
Streep is consistently bang, bang, bang.
But she's so good.
Diane Keaton
got something.
Diane Keaton only needs that one fucking film.
That's true.
Keaton.
You know,
and that film is
Murder Mysteries.
That film
love
is
it. First Wives Club. Fucking shit, it is that.
Okay, let's.
What's that?
So we've got 30 seconds for the end of the show. That was an absolute whitewash this week, mate. I'm sorry that you have to be here for this.
Susie's show is on at 1 p.m.
at the Globe Bar.
This is good of you,
the Globe Bar.
It's called Supersonic 90s Kid and it's free, but you have to pay on the way out. Don't be an arsehole about it. Some people, and don't put like 10p in the bucket. That's really fanny behaviour.
Yeah, do pay.
I've got a card reader this year, so you haven't got an excuse. Pay me a fiver.
That's it. We're gone. See you next week.
Bye.